The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In 1985, 13-year-old Lavina Masters was in her home when someone broke in and raped her. When police investigated, they collected the DNA evidence in a rape kit, and then it sat on a shelf for 21 years.
My evidence on my life sat on the shelf, waiting, and I sat alone in the darkness. Alone, afraid, terrified, traumatized, wondering, when would my first responders come to my rescue?
Masters, after decades of waiting, learned after the DNA evidence was tested that her case had also gone beyond the state's statute of limitations, and that the man that raped her had also gone on to sexually assault two other women before he was finally arrested. Danielle, a junior at the University of Texas at Austin, asked that we not use her full name. She was also sexually assaulted.
Before college even started my freshman year, I went to a fraternity party and I started talking to a boy. He invited me up to his room. I had never really drank before college, so I was very, very drunk for one of the first times in my life. And I told him I did not want to have sex, but I was so incapacitated that he did it anyway.
She says between the procedure of collecting the evidence for a rape kit and hearing news stories about the state's backlog of those kits, she decided not to report her sexual assault. She says because that wait period, it takes so long, is this something that she wasn't prepared for? Danielle says she didn't want to have to replay that night over and over again in her head and expecting to wait years to have the evidence in her case tested, even wondering if it ever was going to amount to anything at all. So is this what happens when there's this apparent lack of interest by law enforcement agencies to fully pursue rapists with all the resources at their disposal? Why do these rape kits, thousands of them, sit and not get tested? Why do we have this rape kit backlog? We're talking about that this afternoon, and there's lots of ways for you to join our conversation. You can call in at 210-614-8980. You could email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Representative Victoria Nieves. She's the state representative for District 107. Andrea Lopez is the community engagement coordinator for the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. And Elsa Connect is the director of policy and advocacy for the nonprofit Joyful Heart Foundation, which houses a national End the Backlog initiative. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you for the invitation.
You. Representative Nieves, you passed a bill in the last legislative session that helped move the ball down the court in getting some progress in finding funds for getting rape kits tested, but still there's a backlog in the state of Texas. A new bill you filed. What are you looking for this session?
We owe it to survivors in Texas to ensure that their rape kits get tested after they go through a traumatic experience and then having to undergo a very personal and invasive 4 to 6 hour to collect that exam. So for us, it's making sure that we let survivors know that we have their backs and that we are prioritizing this in Texas.
And so your new bill?
Yeah. So the new bill, what we're looking to do is, so last session, we made some progress on several fronts. One, making sure that we put it on the radar, but second, also framing this in a bipartisan way. So during the interim, we created a sexual violence task force to really do a deep dive and study. And House Bill 8 is an omnibus rape kit backlog bill where we aim to tackle it in several different ways.
And can you give me those details?
Yes, absolutely. So there's what we're looking at doing is, one, when we heard the story of Lavinia Masters and the fact that when we have some rape kits sitting untested for so long that the statute of limitations passes, one of the things that the legislation does is it tolls the statute of limitations in those specific instances where a rape kit has not been tested. It also looks at the pipeline operationally, setting timelines for us to ensure the timely testing. There's information in there to also ensure that we notify survivors in the event that a rape kit is going to be destroyed at some point.
I understand you're also looking to have an accounting of how many rape kits there are sitting on shelves in Texas. In researching for today's program, I found numbers all over the place about how many rape kits we have outstanding in the state. So first of all, can you tell me what you think the correct number is, and why don't we have an official number that we can bank on?
So we know that there are thousands of untested rape kits sitting on shelves all across the state. And what we're aiming to do is have an audit so that law enforcement, the labs, report to the state so we can get an accurate count and to really grab a hold of and understand the true scope of the problem. So that's what House Bill 8 seeks to do. We know that, you know, there's Dallas Police Department or the crime lab in Dallas has, you know, several thousand, over 1,000. We know that DPS has several more thousand. So what we're hoping to do is get a good grasp of the number, the true number in Texas.
So when DPS is reporting that there are, I think like 2,138, I think is the number that they have, of rape kits untested in the state of Texas, they're just talking about that they have in the DPS inventory.
That's correct. And the last time that we had an audit was back after legislation in 2011 that was passed by Senator Wendy Davis. And at that time in the state, there were about 19,000 or so reported rape kits. But in Texas, every single year, we have more than 18,000 rapes that are reported. And so it's incumbent upon us as a state to ensure that we have an accurate figure so that we can tackle this issue.
Well, let me just ask you, aren't you kind of like, I mean, it's kind of like, doesn't make a whole lot of sense that you have to ask or put pass a law that requires that they figure out how many of these rape kits are sitting around in the state of Texas.
Yeah, I think this is a problem nationally. And so we need to ensure, we want to make sure that this, once this legislation is in place, and as we're prioritizing survivors, that we're getting a good understanding of the scope of the problem. But it's not just the number. It's also a matter of the state fully funding this issue, dedicating the resources to ensuring that we have the lab infrastructure, the technology, the employees to timely process these rape kits.
And also, I know you're looking to have some sort of notification of the victims before the police can destroy a rape kit before it's been tested. Explain that.
Sure, absolutely. So, and we heard stories, there was a CNN story, for example, that talked about some rape kits that were destroyed before even, you know, and without notifying the victims, the survivors. So we want to ensure that in the event that a rape kit is going to be destroyed, that the victim is notified. And also that in instances where there are what we call non-reports, where an individual doesn't want to prosecute, that they have additional time to be able to report and decide if they want to make that decision to report the crime, to prosecute.
We're talking about the backlog of rape kits in the state of Texas. Why are there so many? Why don't we have a full accounting of all the ones that we have in the state? I've heard reports that there are kits that have mold growing all over them because they've sat there for so long without being addressed. What is the issue? This seems like it's just befuddling. And I would love to hear from our callers. What do you think about this issue? Why don't you think it's been fully addressed? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was in January that President Donald Trump signed into law the Sexual Assault Forensic Evidence Reporting SAFER Act into law, and that requires some backlog testing of rape kits. That law was authored by John Cornyn of Texas, Republican, with Democrat Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat from Minnesota. Here's John Cornyn on the importance on this issue.
With Lavinia Masters and Carol Bart and so many others who have talked about their experience having been sexually assaulted and then finding that the forensic evidence collected in what has come to be known as a rape kit was never tested, and thus their assailant never identified. So what we have done in honor of Debbie and her courage, as well as that of these other brave women, is we have appropriated more than $100 million to be used as grants to local jurisdictions to test untested rape kits. A few years ago when we got started, it was estimated that there are as many as 400,000 of these untested rape kits. And, of course, through the power of DNA testing, we're literally able to identify with certainty who the assailant is from the DNA that they've left behind. One of the great things about this testing of these rape kits is it also can exclude people who may have been falsely accused of crimes by literally exonerating them from based on the physical evidence and the DNA present.
And I'm going to go into a little depth here about when we talk about the collection of this evidence and what an invasive process this can be. The building of the kit can take up to 4 to 6 hours. There's poking and prodding, in-depth photography. For hours, the patient is swabbed from head to toe. Every orifice is examined. The hair is combed. Teeth is flossed. Nails are scraped. They're completely naked in front of multiple medical professionals while they're examined, photographed, and questioned. Some victims decline to subject themselves to rape kit collection simply because this is such a traumatic experience to submit to one of them. Now, during this time, the patient cannot eat, drink, or shower before or during this evidence is collected. They're repeatedly violated during this invasive technique that's required for collecting the evidence. They can't take a break or rest. In the meantime, they must make a statement and answer these really detailed questions from police officers. And this is happening with the knowledge frequently now that all this evidence is being collected and could just sit on a shelf for years before it ever gets tested, if it gets tested at all. Elsa Connect is the director of policy and advocacy at the nonprofit Joyful Heart Foundation. They have an initiative called End the Backlog. And Elsa, welcome to The Source. What is the rationale on why it is so hard to get these things tested?
Thank you for having me, Dave. I want to start by saying that every untested kit is a missed opportunity to promote public safety in a community and to bring a path to justice for survivors. So when rape kits sit untested on shelves, cases go unsolved, serial rapists remain undetected, and wrongfully convicted people remain incarcerated. And this is all while survivors continue to wait for justice. One of the reasons that the backlog exists in the first place is because most jurisdictions and states don't have policies requiring the testing of all rape kits. And that leaves the decision of which kits to test up to individual police officers, investigators, or prosecutors. These decisions are too often based on bias or victim blaming, lack of knowledge about the power of DNA technology, and the limited resources available to law enforcement agencies and crime labs. And so for too long, sexual violence has not been prioritized as the violent crime that it is. And that has played out in these rape kits being put on shelves to gather dust for sometimes decades.
Passing laws that require police departments to test these rape kits, do they pass laws that require police departments to check out bank robberies when banks are robbed? I mean, it just seems like they're just telling them to do their jobs.
Right. Yeah, it's actually sort of unfathomable, right, that we have to do this. But the truth is that rape kit evidence is so important that we do need to pass these laws. We need to have tight time frames. You know, we're really happy to see this new bill in Texas that shorten up the timeframes that were already on the books. We need to be really clear that hospitals need to contact law enforcement and say, we have this kit, come get it. Because sometimes the kits don't even make it out of the hospital. So, and then we need timeframes for law enforcement to pick them up and say, you have to pick this up, you know, within 7 days. And then timeframes that say when you have to send it to the lab. And then we need to tell the lab how quickly they need to turn that around. Because once it gets to the lab, you know, you have another potential backlog there, and it could take years. So we need to keep pushing everyone along the chain to do a better job with handling rape kit evidence. And we believe strongly that you need to put that in law.
We go to the phones, 210-614-8980, if you want to join our conversation as we talk about this rape kit backlog that we have in Texas and around the country, 210-614-8980. Lauren is on the line. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling because when I went to renew my driver's license, they provide donations, different places and things that you can donate to, and one of them was to testing rape kits. Where does that money go?
Lauren, thank you for that. Representative Nieves is with us, and she authored that law. So what can you tell Lauren?
Yes, thank you so much, Lauren, for calling in. That legislation came about last session through House Bill 1729, and essentially what it does is it asks our fellow Texans to contribute a dollar or any amount that they would like. That funding goes towards a dedicated evidence testing account that is then offered to agencies by the governor's office to apply for grants to get these rape kits tested. And in through the last year, we've raised more than $500,000 from the contributions of more than 200,000 Texans. And so we still have, we shouldn't have to be coming, I will say, to our fellow Texans to contribute. This is something that the state should prioritize. It is doing that. In this session, we're looking at putting additional appropriations, so that we don't have to, so that we can allocate the appropriate resources to get the rape kits tested.
I read a news story, Representative Nieve, that there, Harris County was the only county that applied for money from that fund. Is that correct?
There have been more that have applied since then and have received, including the Dallas area as well. And I do want to thank State Representatives Ina Minjarez from San Antonio and Donna Howard. They've also been working. We've been working together on this issue, and they've done a lot of work as well.
Now, we're joined also with Andrea Lopez. She is the Community Engagement Coordinator for the Rape Crisis Center in San Antonio. So I went through this painful telling of what it takes to get through the collect the evidence. And I don't do that because I don't want to dissuade anybody, but I think as a community, we need to know how difficult that is. And I think that should add to the responsibility that we have to test these kits, because people went through all that. And you have you've counseled people when they go through that process, right?
Sure. And I'd like to first echo the call of my fellow panelists in saying that there's absolutely a fundamental issue of a lack of prioritizing sexual violence and sexual assault. That there is a backlog is proof of that, right? And to your point, Dave, sure, at the Rape Crisis Center, our work spans a lot of different spaces. In addition to direct client advocacy and direct services that we provide, holding space for individuals in those exam spaces, dispatching advocates around the clock to the hospitals that we partner with that have these dedicated SANE programs, sexual assault nurse examiner programs, there's also sort of a twofold function to the work as well. So not only are we in those immediate crisis intervention spaces, but we have an entire primary prevention focus to what we do, and that is directly working with law enforcement, right, to address the barriers that exist or some of the contributing factors for this backlog, like challenging law enforcement bias, ensuring that those frontline responders understand the effects of trauma on the brain when interfacing with survivors or victims when taking reports, ensuring that police officers are not blaming or shaming and that they're not a part of the problem in that regard.
Now, I'm going to go to the caller. This is Don, 210-614-8980. Don, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
question is, if a victim is willing to pay for the process of the rape kit themselves, would that not give an advantage? My wife was a nurse for a number of years, and I'm saying that probably 60% of the results, because of large pharmaceutical companies, results were inaccurate. So in my blood testing, I pay for it myself because I think with the volume and the terrible health care we've got in this country, the results are inaccurate. So,
all right, Don, thank you for that. And Representative Niave, can you address that?
Yes, and that's a good question that was raised that we looked at. And one, we don't think that a victim should be paying for her own, the testing of her own rape kit. Each rape kit costs between $200 to $2,000 to test, depending on how much DNA evidence is in the kit. And that's something that should fall within the purview of state government. And also from our understanding, legally, an individual cannot pay for it. But an individual can contribute through clearthekits.org, for example, to this dedicated fund to help us get more rape kits tested.
You can see how that would be complications. People who can afford to have things
right.
tested versus those who can't. It leads to having two systems of justice for one who can afford it and the others people who are strapped for cash, like most of us. But also, Representative, I have heard that there have been some hospitals that have sent bills to women who have been tested, who have had the evidence collected.
And what... we have a series of bills on the rape kit backlog issue. One of them aims to streamline the payment process. And if a hospital does that, they should not be charging a victim for the forensic medical exam to collect it. That is paid for by the state's Crime Victims Compensation Fund. So if that is happening, we'd urge individuals to reach out to us so that we can address that issue to help.
And why isn't the Texas Crime Victims Compensation Program used to pay for the testing of the kits themselves?
That's a good question. So that pays for the conducting of the exam. Then we have the labs that need the funding in order to timely process the evidence and the DNA, as well as upload the DNA up to the CODIS system. And we heard that there's, in our research and work, we've learned that in the past there have been backlogs of that as well. So it's we're very hopeful that this session on a bipartisan basis, our legislature is really coming together to tackle this issue. The governor has talked about this as a priority. We thank him. We also thank Speaker Bonin's office for also prioritizing this matter. And I really think that we're going to be putting a significant amount of additional resources this session towards making sure that our state gets these rape kits tested in a timely manner.
So you can see from Senator John Cornyn that this has become a bipartisan issue, that this is not red versus
yes.
blue.
Absolutely. This is very, very important that, justice it should not be partisan, that we want to ensure we're working across the aisle and just very proud of our legislature coming together to prioritize this issue.
But still, it's a head scratcher. And why did we have to get to this point? Was it just
right.
that certain people had to make enough noise until both sides realized something had to be done?
I think last session we made progress in terms of getting it on the radar, raising the flag, and really in this Me Too era, that's really helped kick open the door for us to make additional progress. So I think the women all across this country who are making their voices heard, telling their stories, because this is how we are able to make additional progress on this front.
All right, we're taking a break. We want to hear from our callers, and you can be anonymous. Particularly, we'd like to hear from anyone who's gone through this process and they don't know what's going on with their case. That's part of the bill that's been filed by the representative, telling that they're giving people an update on where they are with getting their kits tested and doing the investigation. Frequently, as part of the trauma. The trauma after trauma in this investigation is being felt like you're completely alone and you don't have an advocate looking out for you. We're going to hear from the Rape Crisis Center and what services they provide here in San Antonio, and more from the Joyful Heart Foundation about what's happening on the national basis. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas residents donated more than $500,000 to help reduce the state's estimated backlog of 15,000 untested rape kits. The money was raised as part of the 2017 partisan law that allows people to donate a dollar or more when they get their driver's license and vehicle registration. State Representative Victoria Nieve she authored that legislation, and she joins us to talk about how that law is working and where we are going forward as we continue to deal with this backlog of rape kits that we have in the state of Texas. So, Representative, tell me, you have the bill. It's been named a priority by Governor Abbott. It looks like you're getting a lot of support, bipartisan support for this. And if it passes the way you intend it to pass, tell us about how you think that will result in actionable changes for people who go through or victims of sexual assault, survivors of sexual assault.
Thank you for the opportunity. We're hoping that through this legislation that we're going to bring real meaningful reform to the system in Texas and to tackle the backlog, but also to bring justice to survivors, some who have been waiting for years to get their rape kits tested. And so that our goal is really in the end to bring justice to women survivors in Texas.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Michael is on the line. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I don't know if it's been clarified, but I hope it will be. I think it's absurd that we have a statute of limitations on these rape kits, so-called, in which the victim came forward in you know, reasonable time, and then it was the state's responsibility to follow through on that legally. So why is the victim being punished when it's the state who has failed in the legal aspect of following through? The statute of limitations should be thrown out completely on these. It should be the date when they presented the rape kit.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's go back to the representative.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's what our legislation seeks to address as well. I think a Lavinia Masters story where her rape kit sat so long for more than 20 years that by the time it got tested, the statute of limitations had already passed. So our legislation tries to address that by tolling or extending the statute of limitations in specific cases where there has been a backlogged rape kit that has not been tested.
So, Ilsa, connect with the Joyful Heart Foundation in the Backlog Initiative. Can you talk a little bit more about where we are nationally? There have been bills and laws passed in Washington, D.C. that's supposed to be dealing with this. Why isn't that working?
Well, this is really a state issue. Unfortunately, the federal government, you know, can't tell the states what to do and how to test their crime evidence. They can fund rape kit testing, which they do, through a couple of different programs. One is the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative grant program that provides funding to states and local communities to inventory their old kits, take the old kits off the shelves and get them into a lab, investigate the cases that come out of that, prosecute offenders, and reengage survivors in the criminal justice system. But we are seeing a lot of movement at the state level on rape kit reform. From 2016 to 2018, we were involved in 50 bills that passed in 32 states, affecting approximately 126,000 survivors whose kits had been languishing untested on shelves across the country. Every year, we are seeing more and more legislation introduced. Right now, we're tracking 43 bills, and at this time last year, I think we were tracking about 27. So we are definitely seeing a lot of interest across the country on legislating rape kit reform and related issues such as the statute of limitations.
Now, we did have, and I used the past tense, a Violence Against Women Act in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. That is now expired. With the new Democratic Congress, they have filed a new version, an updated version of the Violence Against Women Act. What would that do?
In fact, that bill had a hearing yesterday, I believe. So that is looks like it has some legs right now. That bill relates a lot to funding programs for survivors, domestic violence, sexual assault, dating violence, trafficking. victims, and funds law enforcement response. It funds training for law enforcement and prosecutors and even service providers on how to respond to survivors of violence against women. And of course, the legislation covers all genders, but it's largely a funding bill, and some of the funding in that bill can be used to test rape kits, but it's really not the largest source of funding for testing rape kits.
And I understand that's where the question about gender has become a sticking point for some members mm-hmm. of Congress who don't like some of the non-binary language that's in the bill.
Correct. Right. That has been an issue for several years now.
And so it probably will get through Congress. The question is whether or not it'll get through the Senate and if it'll end up on the president's desk and what it will look like there. That's something else that voters need to be following. Let's go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Hector joins us. Hey, Hector, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello there. Yes, I've been working process improvement for over 40 years in a career with the federal government. And, my recommendation is fairly straightforward. Much of the inertia is going to be local. All these law enforcement agencies have a lot of priorities and a lot of things to get done. And that's one of the excuses or reasons that you're often given for building these backlogs. I simply recommend that take all the funding that you gather from all the different sources and centralize the activity of actually collecting these kits. The results of these kits, the outcome packages, so that all the local agency has to do is put it in the appropriate container, probably provided by this agency I'm recommending or this activity, and then that agency sees to the fact the information available out of these analyses. But basically take care of the analyses, standardize how the analyses are done, they work on that accuracy problem that, centrally each of these communities aren't going to be able to do that and pursue it. But basically centralize the activity so all the local community has to do is send the completed kits for analysis to a single location where then they get distributed as appropriate to different labs that do these things across the state. But basically, the whole process then gets regulated, and the money gets used most efficiently to do that exact one thing, to basically get these kits off the backlog and to give a process that's simple and straightforward with no possible excuses for the local agency not to simply drop.
All right, so Hector has basically given us an idea on how to reorganize and reform and streamline this process. So Representative Victoria Niave, is that something that is doable? I mean, the DPS, they basically are taking over these cases for smaller counties that don't have large law enforcement agencies. They have the ability to do that, and they're not doing that.
Right. So the DPS really provides that role, like you said, for a lot of the smaller counties or rural areas and areas like Dallas, where I represent. Dallas has its own lab, the Southwestern Institute of Forensic Sciences, that does the DNA testing, the rape kit testing. So I think it depends on the jurisdiction, but our legislation, the Lavinia Masters Act, seeks to do is really to compile all of this information so that we know how many untested rape kits are sitting on shelves across Texas, but also so that we can, if we need to start holding, certain agencies accountable, then we need to do so. But right now, DPS is doing is like a central repository for a lot of the rural and smaller counties.
Let's go to Paige on the line. And Paige, welcome to The Source. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I just had a question. I know that it's necessary to report whenever you're dealing with the sexual assault of a minor. And I was wondering if minors' rape kits are in any way prioritized and how extending that process can affect the child.
Representative, how do they decide which rape kits to do first? Is it chronological? Is it importance? Is it a minor's case? How do they do that?
That's a good question. I, from my understanding, I think it depends on the local jurisdiction or a law enforcement agency that determines which rape kits get submitted. And I think that in terms of minors, the statute of limitations is different for the rape of a minor than it is for an adult individual. And so I think that's a good point. But I think that from my understanding, that decision right now is made locally.
So, Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center in San Antonio, if you have a survivor of sexual assault and they've just come to you, I went through this horrible experience, I don't know what I should do now. I'm reluctant to go through this process of having this evidence collected. What do you tell them?
We'd first start by believing and thanking the survivor for coming forward, because that does take an immense amount of courage to do so. And not everyone, to your point, not everyone wants to be a part of that process or even seek justice through proper channels. And by proper, I mean the system's response, right? So,
yeah. And I also heard, I went through that list of how what happens to you, but the survivor can opt out of any part of that.
Right. Absolutely. 100%. And that's part of being trauma-informed, right, is taking the lead of that individual. And it's a two-part process, right? So the forensic exam is first designed to medically, body-wise, ensure that the individual is safe and then determine other follow-ups from there if needed. And then that forensic piece of collecting DNA, if any is there to collect, is that twofold piece. But if an individual opts out, they absolutely can do that. We have advocates that we dispatch around the clock to be with survivors in that space with the two local hospitals we work with.
We're going to talk more about the services that the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio provides when we come back from this break. I'll get to some more of the phone calls, 210-614-8980. If you want to call in and join our conversation as we try to figure out what's behind this rape kit backlog. Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Sexual Assault Evidence Collection Kit, that's the proper name, but the shorthand is Rape Kit, and this is evidence that is collected after a sexual assault and can be used to track down the aggressor, the rapist, and then put them behind bars because this is admissible in court. But if you don't test the kit, what's going on? What happened? Why the breakdown there? We're talking about that now. There's thousands and thousands of these kits sitting around in Texas not being tested. Elsa Connect is with the national nonprofit Joyful Heart Foundation. They have the national In the Backlog initiative. How did this In the Backlog initiative, how did y'all get started on this? When did you recognize we've got to get on this?
Well, since 2010, the National Rape Kit Backlog and eliminating the backlog has been our top priority. We came to our attention through when Detroit found their more than 10,000 untested kits, and Joyful Heart was deeply involved in some of the reform work there. Our founder, Mariska, has been very concerned about this issue, and she describes the moment that she heard about it, you know, is that sort of her head was going to explode, because this is really a demonstration of how the criminal justice system treats sexual assault survivors and, you know, how they handle sexual violence. So that was the beginning, was really seeing there are 10,000 kits sitting on shelves in Detroit, and when they started taking those kits off the shelf and testing them, they were identifying serial offenders who had been walking on the streets for decades and had been committing crimes over and over again, all kinds of crimes, crimes against people they knew and people they don't know, anything ranging from forgery to domestic violence to child abuse and homicide. And so that, you know, when you learn those numbers, you really can't turn away from this. So it became our top priority in 2010. In 2016, we launched our national campaign to pass legislation in all 50 states requiring the testing of rape kits in a timely manner, making sure that there are tracking systems to test rape kits to increase accountability and transparency in the system, requiring survivors have rights to know the status of their kit because most leave the hospital and never hear again anything about their case or where their kit is. And so we are working diligently every day, every year, to pass these bills and make sure that we not only end the backlog, but make sure that it never happens again.
And Ilsa Connect, is there a national database of DNA samples to check that against, and are able to figure out with pretty much 100% certainty that they got the guy?
Mm-hmm. There is a national database. It's often referred to as CODIS. There are also state databases, and there are local databases. So sometimes a large community like Miami or New York City will have their own local database. And what happens is that in different states, there are different laws governing what kinds of DNA profiles will go into these databases. But generally, people who are convicted of sexual assault and other violent crimes, of course, homicide, are swabbed for DNA. Their DNA profile, which is basically just a series of numbers, goes into the DNA database. And then when you have evidence from crime scenes, including rape kits, the crime lab will test those to identify a potential offender's DNA. Once they single that out, they can put that DNA in the DNA database, and the database constantly checks itself for matches, and you can get a match that way. And that can, it's every day there are matches on that database that are giving law enforcement leads in cases that they never would have been able to solve before.
Back to the phones with Bob. Hi, Bob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I know the hospitals take very good care of the patients, but what kind of training does the EMS, the first responders, have to help the psychological and physical needs of this woman?
All right, Bob, thank you for the call. Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. Can you help us?
Sure, absolutely, and thank you for that question. So that is directly the space of our work, and that's our education component to what we do. So as I mentioned before, we do train law enforcement, first responders, military, the frontline individuals to ensure that they're also trauma-informed. And I think that this really speaks to the systemic response that is handling something like sexual violence or sexual assault, so that we aren't re-traumatizing or re-victimizing any survivor.
So give me a little more help with learning to understand what we mean when we say trauma-informed training. Help me understand that.
Yeah, so that encompasses a few different things. So stuff like the neurobiology of trauma. So how does somebody present after something like sexual assault? There is no universal way to respond to something like sexual assault or trauma. And so ensuring that law enforcement, EMS, firefighters, first responders understand that and recognize that that can show up in different ways in terms of reactions, sometimes no reaction, right? And so being trauma-informed is being aware in those ways, stuff like survivor sensitivity, and understanding how folks can present.
And Representative Niave?
Yes, and I wanted to share that we have filed legislation, House Bill 282, to require trauma-informed training for those first respond for the law enforcement. And there are some, as she mentioned, agencies that are already doing that, and we laud them for that effort, but that's not the case all across the state. So we want to ensure that law enforcement has this specific trauma-informed training, so whenever they encounter a victim.
Let's go to the phones one more time with Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I would like to go back to your description, Dave, of what happens when a survivor is in the exam room getting the safe exam. Let me say that I don't know what every hospital does, but I can assure you that in the San Antonio area, we have advocates who are there at the hospital to work with the individual who has suffered this trauma. And these advocates are trauma-informed, trained. They ensure that the individual, the survivor, feels safe. That if they need food, if they may be someone who is displaced and hasn't eaten in a while, we make sure they have food. We make sure that all of their needs are being met, that their immediate needs are being met. I think that, and I appreciate you taking back kind of a little bit what you said, but people hear one thing first and the other second. So I want to make sure that people understand not to dissuade anyone from ever reporting, ever getting an exam, that we don't have them with a room full of medical professionals, we always make sure that their privacy and their safety and that they feel safe is in the forefront.
Jamie, thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate you setting the record straight with that. Andrea Lopez, can you tell us more about the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio, resources that you provide, and how people can give you some support?
Absolutely. So we serve both primary and secondary survivors of sexual violence. We have a 24-hour hotline that we operate in-house at 210-349-7273, where the folks can call up and get confidential, supportive assistance through that space. We have an entire client advocacy component to our work, which entails both sexual assault and human trafficking cases and individuals that we can follow. It's a trust-based relationship-focused model so that nothing we do is a one-off, but we're ensuring continuity of care for folks in that regard. We also offer counseling, again, entirely free of charge. And then we have a prevention education team that's in the community working with youth in middle and high schools and starting conversations around sexual violence so that this is not a taboo topic. And we continue to drive dialogue around ways to end, right, violence and oppression of all forms.
How busy are you?
We're really busy. So last year, we fielded around 15,000 calls through that hotline that I mentioned. We saw about 1,100 folks in our counseling space, educated nearly 10,000 individuals in the community. So we're busy.
So the phone rings typically, and what are you hearing?
So on average, again, typically in a given week, we can answer maybe 70 to 80 calls. And those calls range, right, from primary survivors, the individual directly impacted, not ready to come into the space, not ready to maybe seek out counseling or meet with an advocate, but they do want someone to hold space for them. Not every caller is a primary survivor, so it could be a spouse, a significant other, a friend, a family member wanting to know how best to support their loved one. And we answer those calls as well. So all of our advocates are trained. You will always get a live individual answering that phone.
And how are you funded?
Through grants, so local, state, and federal grant money.
Elsa, connect with the Joyful Heart Foundation. San Antonio does have this robust and helpful rape crisis center, but is that the case across the country? Does every metropolitan area have the adequate support here?
No, unfortunately, it's not the case. It sounds like a really wonderful place there. There are wonderful rape crisis centers across the country. Many communities, I would say, most of them have them. What is lacking in many communities is a trained nurse examiner to collect the evidence and provide medical care and in a trauma-informed and victim-sensitive way. So that is a real lack, a big gap in the services that are offered to survivors across the country.
It shows you what great leadership can do. People step up and they say, we're going to start this initiative. Not every community can find individuals and then maintain that. This is something that San Antonio really enjoys. Representative Niave, these bills, they seem like they've got some great legs in the legislature. Are you confident they're going to pass?
Thank you. We're working very hard to earn the support and, have not encountered opposition at this moment. So we're hopeful that we can get this legislation passed this session. And Texas is really leading the way in our view. We've only just begun. It's just critical that we show survivors that we're here to see this through, even when this issue fades from the limelight.
Representative Victoria Niave is a state representative for District 107. Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center here in San Antonio. Ilsa Connect is with the Joyful Heart Foundation. Their initiative is in the backlog of these rape evidence kits. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.